Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends, and welcome to the World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At the World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you doing?
Well, I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
I am doing great.
You know, we're now just in the 500s. You know, the show numbers don't even matter anymore. We just know we're in the 500s somewhere.
Well, you know, until we hit maybe 600. And I think we should mark these the 100s. You know, every time we hit one of those, we should mention it. Otherwise,
and we do have the 200th show called World Transform coming up sometime next week. So we will note that. We probably won't do a full week celebration, but we'll observe it anyway because it's. It's its own little milestone, I think. So we'll definitely do that. But hey, speaking of numbers, okay, boy, have we got a show for you folks? Not only tonight, but over the next few shows. We've called tonight's show 72 Reasons to Be Excited About the Future. And if you want spoilers for where we're going to be going after this evening, check out futuristspeaker.com. That's the website of Thomas Frey. He's a noted futurist and speaker right here in the Boulder area in Colorado. I've been to his get-togethers up in Boulder at least once, I think a couple of times, and obviously follow his web doings. We've talked about his work multiple times on this show, but this one's a little bit different. This is a piece that we're linking here tonight called 72 Stunning Things in the Future that will be common 10 years from now that don't exist today. And Stephen, you read that over and you said, you know what we could do? What did you say?
I said we could do maybe a couple of weeks out of this stuff.
And
of course, Phil can never let me, you know, have the final word on things like that. You came back and
no,
we're
going to
do 3 weeks.
That's right. We're going to do 3 weeks. You should have known anything you said, right? No, a dozen weeks or nothing. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, well, it's that much goodness here. I mean, 72 reasons to be excited about the future. Well, Phil, I mean, this is we're sort of doing the counter programming for the rest of media, right? I mean, you know, you watch the news, and you know, the world's coming apart at the seams. It seems like, you know, and so
right.
we're coming at it the other direction. I mean, here's some things to be excited about.
And Tom has just put together an incredibly wonderful list of possibilities, and not only possibilities but likelihoods. These are things that he comes right out and says they'll be common in 10 years. And we might take issue with one or two as we work through the full list of them. But by and large, I think he's on the right track, and it challenges us as we go through this list over a few shows to come up with a few of our own. Right. We don't want to make Tom do all the work. We will see if we can't add a few to the list as we go. But if you've followed the link and you're looking at the story, once again, it's called 72 Stunning Things in the Future that will be common 10 years from now. Just note that we're going to work through the list backwards. So we're starting at the end and we're going to work to the front. And wow, let's just jump in. Here are some of the possibilities that Thomas Frey says will be common in 10 years, Bitcoin loans for houses, cars, business equipment, and more. What do you think, Stephen? Is Bitcoin going to be part of our financial framework, people financing their houses in 10 years?
Provided Bitcoin survives. I think so. It's Bitcoin is one of those things that governments, by and large, hate, you know?
Right.
And if there were a way for, you know, a governmental entity to shut it down, they would. And provided they can't, then you're going to, yeah. Bitcoin can be, you know, would be used for more and more things down to even daily transactions, I would think. So, yeah, this I take no issue with this. I think provided it survives and we have Bitcoin in 10 years, I say, yeah, people
you
will.
You can swap Bitcoin for a blockchain currency, right? You know, if not Bitcoin,
right.
Something else using that technology. I agree. The next one is actually one that I've mentioned. I've written this one up as a scenario. I love this idea. Self-filling water bottles built with built-in atmospheric water harvesters. As you recall, Luke Skywalker's uncle Owen was a moisture farmer there on Tatooine.
Yeah, he had moisture evaporators, not evaporators. You know,
evaporators. That's
yeah,
right.
That
just trying to get some water to create the moisture to grow the crops. And here we've got the idea of a self-filling water bottle. It's just going to pull water out of the air, and you got your water in your water bottle.
I don't know if it'll be common in 10 years,
but it's a real possibility. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just thinking, you know, some places it would work better than others. We hardly need the technology. You know, I can just kind of, you know, breathe in here in Louisiana and get the water I need almost. You know, I would think that the amount of water in the air wherever you live would make it an easier or harder job, you know, depending on your local humidity. What do you think, Phil? You think that
I would agree completely. Here in Colorado, that's a big task, getting the water out of the air. We don't have that nice soupy water you get. Or soupy air you get like I used to have back in Kentucky, or they have in the Midwest, or down there in Louisiana. You know, lots of moisture in that air. It'd be a little easier to pull that out of the atmosphere, you would think, right?
I would guess. Yeah.
That whatever is powering this process, you would need less power in a more humid environment. But I just love the idea of doing it. I love the idea that you would be able to probably filter that water, purify that water in the process, and not have to keep filling your water bottle. You know, it's like, I got some more water, I better drink. Depending on where you are, you might just drink every time it gets full. You know, if you're in a dry climate, it takes a while. In Louisiana, you wouldn't want to do that, right? Things be refilling itself.
Yeah, you go, okay, take a rest, man. I don't need a full water bottle every 10 minutes. I really don't. But yeah, I think it's a fantastic idea, and I will definitely get one when that happens. It reminds me of the life bottles that you can take any water source, no matter how dirty, and it'll filter it, and,
right,
to make something and make drinking water out of. I've tested those and they work. This would actually pull it out of the air. You wouldn't even have to mess with the nasty water. So.
Kind of the next step, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
clean water out of dirty water. How about clean water out of no water? Yeah, there you go. Go ahead.
There you are. Next is reputation networks. So this is these would be bots, basically, right, Phil, that would monitor your reputation and repair it when and if your reputation online needed that sort of repair. You know, you get a buddy that decides, wouldn't it be great to publish on some social network pictures of you guys from 10 years ago out partying? Well, maybe that's not what you want at this point in your life, you know.
Right.
Maybe these little bots kind of monitor things like that and pull it down when something like that gets posted. Not a bad idea. I had a conversation with my kids about this. I said, you know, when I was a kid, you know, we almost had a right to be stupid when we were young. We could do stupid things, and it wouldn't come back to haunt us. You guys don't have that luxury. You know, you can't. You know,
you can't unring the bell.
Everything's monitored and logged in various ways. You got to be careful. You got to be careful about things like that. So, you know, a parent to a child, kind of trying to explain that to them. This may be sort of a way to slightly unring the bell. So maybe.
Yeah, what'll be interesting about that is to see how powerful those bots become. And you would think that maybe those with a lot of resources at their disposal might be able to do much more intensive cleanup on their reputation, their online reputation, than than the average Joe. You know, so you think about, you know, the comparison is credit repair, and I think, you know, the reach of this would be significantly farther because the amount of online information on you touches all aspects of your life. But it'll be interesting to see how powerful those agents become, and you can see them maybe taking on kind of a lawless character. You know, these might become something that operate outside the system to fix people's reputations, because some people, frankly, are going to need help outside the system to get things reasonably
under square. There's some criticism you could make of something like this. I mean, we've always traditionally upheld the right to free speech, right? If I want to say something, pretty much to some extent, I can do it.
Right.
And this, there's this new idea of the right to be forgotten. You know, if it's sort of a privacy concern. But I mean, you know, what if I'm a complete creep? And I don't want the fact that I'm a complete creep to be out there so that I can continue to be a complete creep, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Should a person like that, that, you know, maybe is abusive of the people he dates or something like that, I mean, do we want a person like that to have reputation scrubbing available to him? I don't know. That is something we as a society are going to have to work through.
It's like security. It's white hat, black hat. You know, I mean, there'll be good applications and bad applications, but I think the technology will definitely be there. But you know, the thing is, you point out people who've got, you know, skeletons in their closet to come out, but also a person's reputation can be utterly destroyed without them ever having done anything wrong, right?
Right.
So there's all kinds of scenarios. And it'll be interesting to see how the dynamics of this kind of capability play out in terms of both the abuse that you mentioned and potentially the ability to set things right for people who have, either are being victimized, you know, or either are being punished more than they should for something that should long be forgotten, or who are just totally being victimized by something they've never done. But we must move on.
Phil, have you ever heard of the concept called the Barbara Streisand effect?
Definitely, yes, absolutely.
Okay. Well, that's, you know, basically Barbara Streisand, somebody published the location of her house online, and so she went to court to fight it, to have it pulled down, and it was like somebody published it in some little directory that no one would have ever seen, but her going to war against that, the information then hit the web, right? So
right.
I guess particularly if you're somebody famous, if you do reputation, you know, try to monitoring, you could end up broadcasting the very thing that you're trying to, you know.
Exactly. Well, and that goes to the overarching category this belongs to, which is kind of this reputation management, right?
Right.
It's like we're talking about the things here that can repair reputations, but step one is don't mess it up, right? I mean, don't.
Yeah.
No need for unforced errors in your reputation, and they're easy to pull. It's easy to create those situations, exactly the way Barbara Streisand did. It's like making a lot of noise about things will bring you attention potentially, and maybe you don't want that. Absolutely, it's interesting future we're moving into.
Absolutely. And so I'm sorry, we got to move on.
Atmospheric energy harvesters. You know what? This is kind of like the self-filling water bottles, only now we're talking power.
Right.
The idea is the atmosphere is filled with ambient concentrated energy. We've heard of, you know, free energy before, right? He says ranging from sunlight to lightning bolts that can be both collected and stored. So we just start pulling the power from the atmosphere and using that. How much is available there? I don't know. How big a deal this would be, I'm not sure. But the idea that it's possible, I think, is definitely true. Whether we'll be seeing it in 10 years, I'm not 100% convinced.
Well, here's, you know, just last week, Phil, we talked about a low-powered computer chip that could be powered by radio waves.
You are absolutely right. We sure did. Yep.
And, I mean, that's already here. We have that already. So if we can power a low-powered computer chip already with just from, you know, radio, whether it's broadcast or whether it's, you know, just natural radio waves that exist out in the universe. I'm willing to go along with this. A lot of this energy, you know, we say free. It's not free. It's in the universe. You know, it's not like some sort of perpetual motion machine or something. This is for real. And I say we're going to be harvesting this power in lots of different ways. I mean, you know, it could very well be that we're getting solar off of our clothing, solar power that way. Just our walking around could be charging things. And radio sometimes.
I tell you what, I became a lot more convinced after you reminded me of the radio, of the computer that runs on radio. That's right. There's already an application for pulling energy out of the air, more or less, because there's lots of ambient radio waves out there that you can power those computers off of. Take that idea and you take it to the next stage and the next stage, right? That's all we're talking about here. Anyway, it's a great idea. I love the idea of, you know, like the water bottle that refills itself. How about the smartphone that recharges itself? Just because it has contact with the air, you know, there's power out there, we'll just recharge the phone. Okay, how about pet education centers, such as boarding schools for dogs and horses to improve an animal's IQ? I love this one so much because it would never occur to me to predict this one. You know, a lot of these other things we've talked about, we've done versions of. I never thought about this. What do you think? People going to send their pets off to get smarter?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think, though, it's a joy to interact with your own pets and to, you know, to train them to do various things. You had a very charming picture. I think it was Soraya that was had the full attention of y'all's, one of your dogs.
Yeah, the puppy, right? This is meaningful in my life because we're training a dog right now. We're going through this even as we speak. And I have to say, if there is going to be a process in the near future for making dogs more intelligent, it's arriving way too late in my life. That's all I can tell you. I've needed for decades, okay?
I would hate for animals, for the dogs to get too smart. Sometimes the charm of some of the animals in my life has been some of their goofiness.
That's true. Will they just be education centers, do you think, or will they be doing something to the little critters' brains to make them smarter? Or will that maybe that's a later step down the road?
I don't know. To me, it just sounds like obedience school on steroids until you actually start, you know, okay, we're injecting, this hormonal soup straight into their brain, and they're going to get a whole lot smarter, until you're talking about something like that, I think you're just talking about an obedience school, which is not.
Here's the thing: you want the dog to come back and bring you your slippers. You don't want the dog to come back and argue about bringing your slippers, right?
You don't understand my life.
Yeah. Why should I bring you your slippers?
I'm a teenager in the house.
Yeah, you know, at that point, not good.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the next one?
Robotic bricklayers. So basically we have talked about on the show several times, like 3D printing for homes. And one of the things that you get out on YouTube and you search for 3D printing of homes, what you're going to probably see is a device that lays down, extrudes cement. And you can have all kinds of curved walls and all kinds of things. But it's, to be honest, it's not necessarily the most attractive exterior for a home. It can make some interesting shapes and things, but I'm not sure that I would want a home that looks like, you know, it's concrete. And where you could actually have the robot just laying brick, you know, bam, 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 just get it in there quick. And just bring down the cost of labor of building a home. That's a substantial part of the cost of a home. So, you know, instead of maybe paying a home off in 30 years, maybe you can do it in 15, right? And people that maybe couldn't have afforded a home at all would have access to homes. Wonderful. I love this. So
I think it's a great idea. And people do love that brick look. Let's face it. It's just nice.
Yeah.
You know,
it
so
is a
you
nice
can,
look.
You can 3D print the bricks and have the robot lay the bricks. Boom. You're back in, you know, you got. It's the return of brick.
You got the best of both worlds then, right? So
that's right. Okay, how about a privacy bill of rights? Kind of goes back to our reputation networks. And he notes privacy has become an increasingly complicated topic but one that is foundational to our existence on planet Earth. And you mentioned this, you know, right that isn't really articulated anywhere, but that we kind of assert and believe we have to be forgotten. That's what would show up in a privacy bill of rights, would be an enumeration of our ability not to be not to have our information known to other people, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, again, we're going to have to work through that because in some instances it could fly right in the face of very important rights like the freedom of speech. So you got to be careful with this. You know, we don't want to go too far because there's a tendency to want to squelch those with whom we disagree anyway.
Yep.
But it's very important that, you know, it's kind of a release valve for the tensions of a multicultural society. You know, I've got my ideas about how things should be done, and you know, the family down the street may have very different ideas, and certainly way across the country there might be much different ideas about how the world should operate. And you know, we could either, you know, go to war over those things, or perhaps maybe we just air it and let the best ideas win. And so that's, to me, freedom of speech is very, very important. And but at the same time, we have never lived in a world that so much of our lives is recorded forever, you know?
Right.
And
right.
And so what does that, you know, what does that mean when, you know, when I'm talking to my kids, you know, I had almost the right to be goofy and stupid when I was a kid, but you guys don't, you know, I mean, that's basically that's the world that they're growing up in. And it's a little bit scary. And so,
well, and privacy goes beyond, you know, it goes beyond those issues too. I mean, you know, just as we believe, I mean, no one ever doubts when it comes to personal property, it's like you have a right not to have people going through your stuff, right? You know,
right.
Nobody gets to like show up at your house while you're not there and like touch all your stuff. I mean, it's just like, this is my stuff. Stay out of it. Right. Kind of thing. And yet our information, we feel kind of that way about it. It's like our personal stuff, but it's not sitting in a drawer in our home. It's sitting,
right,
you know, on the cloud where advertisers and, you know, large corporations and the government and interested third parties of all sorts want to go through it, right? They want to be touching it, and sometimes they have good applications for it, things that would even help us, right? Things that we would be grateful if
Amazon can suggest, you know, a product that, oh yeah, I do want that, or Netflix might actually give me a suggestion for the next movie I watch, but
right.
But there could be negative things too, and you know. Oh, gosh.
There's something creepy about it. I got to say, there's something creepy about it when you look up in your mail and there's an ad for something that you were looking at like earlier that day, or it shows up in your Facebook ad, and it's like somebody's watching me.
Creepier even is when the ad shows up and you were thinking about it, but you told nobody and you didn't do a search for it. Somehow there's something about the way I'm living my life, you know, you know, they run some algorithm and they know that I'm going to need, you know, I thought about needing to buy shaving cream that morning, and Amazon, you know, says, hey, you know, we got 2-for-1 shaving cream. You know, I'm going,
right,
just
right,
thinking about, you know, how do you know? You know,
you fit the profile. Other guys who've looked at
exactly
this, thought about this, and did that, they needed shaving
right
cream, and so do you.
We felt like you were, you know, 87% likely to need shaving cream today.
That is
crazy. Anyway,
because you know what? If it was something you weren't thinking about, we wouldn't even notice, right? But the one that you were, it's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. You know, so yeah.
Okay, and then the last one for tonight, hot new buzzword, mega projects. And actually, we've talked about Tom's piece on mega projects, I think, sometime a year ago or more. But he talks about the fact that there are these huge development projects going on, you know, billion-dollar-plus projects. He mentions the artificial archipelago that's being built in Azerbaijan, Turkey's massive urban renewal project of Istanbul, new construction of the Masjid al-Haram in Saudi Arabia, each exceeding $100 billion. Okay, these are big, big projects that are taking place. But he says those are small potatoes compared to what's coming. These mega cities, with massive new infrastructure being put in place around them, connected in ways that haven't existed before. This is going to be a wave of the future. We're seeing a lot of it happen now. And 10 years from now, it's going to be even more common than it is today. What's interesting, one thing interesting about this is not an American phenomenon. This is a phenomenon that we can look at and see happening elsewhere in the world. Not a big thing here, is it?
Well, I think there's a reason for that, is that command economies tend to do the mega projects more than freer nations. That's one thing for example, when I traveled to Eastern Europe, you would see mm-hmm. things that you could classify as a mega project in Eastern Europe before the wall came down. I'm talking traveling in the late 80s, early 90s, okay, into that part of the world. It's but you see that less in freer areas because, I have an idea of what I want to do with this little piece of land, and right next to me, another guy has an idea of what to do with his little piece of land, and the lady down the street has her idea. So you just see less mega projects, I think, in freer areas. But he's suggesting that we do more of this stuff everywhere, I guess, huh?
Well, he's not suggesting it. He's just saying, watch for it. It's going to happen. And I would take this another step, and I would say 20 years out, because you're right. Right now, it is. If you look at the list of them, most of them are taking place in countries that you would think of as, command economy type places. There's some exceptions. Japan's doing some. They're not exactly that. France, but a lot of these countries, or South Korea, they're kind of on the borderline. Others, India, Saudi Arabia. You think, okay, yeah, there's pretty much they can control what happens with the economy. But to me, this is probably one of those things that is going to pass from the hands of governments to companies quickly, right? We'll skip the government phase of mega projects, and we'll have Google or Apple or whatever the Google or Apple of two decades is from now. They'll be the ones carrying out the mega projects. We'll have them in this country too, probably. And of course, we've always had them around space, right? That's the kind of mega project that the U.S. is good at. But
I think mega projects like seasteading. I think if we see a large seasteading community in the next, 15, 20 years, definitely classify that as a mega project. And some of the, concept art I've seen, we're talking city-sized structures, complete with walls to, keep, hurricane and typhoon protection, right? And
exactly.
That sort of thing. And the freedom that that seasteading would allow, if your particular government doesn't allow, medical experimentation in this way or that way, you could see what could drive, a large corporation, for example, to get behind something like that. So
yeah, I think we'll have to wedge seasteading into a different area. You know what? It's not really a mega. Those are more like micro projects, right? They're little micro countries, right? They wouldn't necessarily be big. Like these, they'd be bigger than, we were talking about the mini seasteads of cruise ships a couple weeks ago, but I'm not sure they're mega projects in the same way that some of these things Tom is talking about. But we're out of time, Stephen. With no time left, we've got to add our own contribution. You read about, you mentioned a new brain scan method that's been developed. What's up with that?
Well, revolutionary method of brain scanning. They've had some ability to scan neurons at that level before, but it was much more expensive and less efficient. And every leap in this sort of area, the applications could be tremendous. We could model computers and end up with AI systems that are modeled on the human brain as a result.
But what'll be commonplace 10 years from now from this development?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think you have that. You'll have other people that, have brain damage or various problems that, that have portions of their brain rebuilt or whatever by, because they used a brain scanning, to rebuild portions of the brain, that sort of thing. So I mean, it could benefit both computer science, benefit brain science. It's ultimately you're talking about something that would allow us to have a digital presence. Maybe after our death, if you had your entire brain scan. So, it's near-term stuff, but also, distant stuff as well that could be, that could really change the world. So I thought that was exciting. That was over at medicalpress.com.
Very cool story. All right. Well, we'll see. We'll see where that one takes us in 10 years. I don't think I heard anything from you that's actually an application we'll see on that in 10 years. But maybe I was being too conservative. If there are treatments around this within 10 years, they'll be groundbreaking. That's for sure. It makes a huge difference that we can look at brains to this level. All right. Well, that does it.
Phil, let me give you my prediction real quick.
Okay.
Won't be a medical thing in 10 years. I think that this will affect computer science within 10 years.
All right. Okay, we'll see.
So I think the AI field will benefit before it's able to be used in medicine.
Very good. And we'll be talking AI again later this week, so we might revisit that one then. All right. Hey, Stephen, great talking with you about this. Thank you all for being with us. We're going to be back Wednesday with some more amazing topics from Tom Frey's list. Until next time, live to see it.